WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right, you are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is hump day. Can you believe that already? Yes, that's right. It's Wednesday, April 27th, 2016. And boy, oh boy, do we have a fantastic hour in store for your ears. To start today's show, we, of course, will talk about Deflategate. I thought we were done with it. I know. We didn't get a chance to dive into it yesterday. Interview went a bit long. But a current NFL quarterback has the back of New England Patriots QB Tom Brady when it comes to his four-game suspension that was ruled by a judge earlier in the week. So you get to hear what Drew Brees had to say this morning during the Dan Patrick Show, so you don't want to miss that. We'll also talk about a new headline for UFC 200 that I'm pretty excited about. Even though Diaz and McGregor won't be fighting in this one, I'm pretty excited about who they have headlining. So you don't want to miss that. We'll also talk Detroit Tigers baseball with the one, the only, Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and author. He'll be around on the show around the 1:30 mark. So you don't want to miss that. Richard always has a great take on the Tigers. We'll also talk a bit of hockey with him as well, pertaining to the Detroit Red Wings. And on the back end of the show, I'm sure Isaac will like this one, Tom Gorris and Dan Gilbert trying to bring a soccer team to Detroit? I got some thoughts on that one, Isaac. I know Isaac is biting his tongue right now. But, yeah, we'll dive into all that and so much more. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But, hey, you know what's next? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners brought to you by the one, the only, Mike Masson.
MSU football has landed a verbal commitment from 2017 linebacker Darian Clemens from Piqua, Ohio. He tweeted his verbal commitment to MSU Tuesday night after receiving an offer from the Spartans while on campus for the spring game. The 6'1", 214-pound Clemens is a three-star prospect and held additional offers from Rutgers, Cincinnati, and a host of MAC schools, according to Rivals.com. Clemens is the seventh verbal commitment for the 2017 MSU class and second from the state of Ohio, joining lineman Matt Carrick, who committed last Wednesday. MSU baseball hosts Toledo in a midweek matchup today at 3:05 p.m. at McLean Baseball Stadium. MSU is currently in the midst of a six-game homestand and a stretch of 14 straight games that will take place in the state of Michigan. The Spartans' last meeting with Toledo last spring ended in a 9-2 MSU victory. MSU softball will play host to Eastern Michigan in their last non-conference matchup of the season at Sekia Stadium today at 4 p.m. MSU holds an 18-12 record in non-conference games this season, including wins over other in-state schools Western Michigan and Central Michigan. EMU snapped a two-game losing streak to the Spartans with a 6-5 win in extra innings in their most recent meeting last spring, but MSU leads the all-time series between the two teams by a 30-17 overall mark. Detroit Tigers center fielder Tyler Collins will not be suspended by Major League Baseball for flipping off the crowd at Comerica Park. Collins flipped off the home crowd after they jeered him, misplaying a routine fly ball during the sixth inning of Monday night's 7-3 win, a league spokesman confirmed. To hear boos after that play hit a trigger inside of me and I lashed out, completely inappropriately, Collins said. I'm absolutely embarrassed and I'm very sorry to everyone in Detroit. I just wanted you guys to understand that I love this team and I want to win, so when we come home and get booed, it's tough to swallow, but like I said, I apologize completely. I'm embarrassed for myself, I know my family is embarrassed of me, and I'm sure these guys are too, so I'm sorry it happened. Meanwhile, the Tigers last night dropped Game 2 of their four-game set with the Oakland Athletics, 5-1 the final. Oakland starting pitcher and former Michigan Wolverine Rich Hill baffled Tigers hitters, tossing 7 scoreless innings while striking out 8 and allowing just 4 hits. Tigers starter Mike Pelfrey turned in his best start of the year despite allowing 5 earned runs. He drops to 0-4 on the season, and get this, the Tiger offense has failed to score one run for Pelfrey while he's been in the game all year. Tough to win a game with no run support. The two teams will square off again tonight in the D, first pitch scheduled for 7:10 p.m. Major League Soccer could be coming to Detroit. Quicken Loans founder and Cleveland Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert, along with Platinum Equity founder and Detroit Pistons owner Tom Gorris, are joining forces to try to bring an MLS franchise downtown during the next round of league expansion. The Michigan State graduates issued a joint statement this afternoon about Detroit being on the rise and that the power of sports could uplift the community. The plan includes building a soccer stadium at a still-to-be-determined site. Rumors say the abandoned Wayne County jail site near Greektown is the number one option. Los Angeles Clippers power forward Blake Griffin's season of injuries continue. The Clippers started off leading the series 2-1 over the Portland Trail Blazers, but in Monday night's game, they lost two valuable players. Chris Paul will be out indefinitely with a broken hand, and Blake Griffin, who left the game with quad soreness, they're both very questionable to return this postseason. Griffin told the press that he is very aggravated when your season is run by injuries. The Clippers spent half of the regular season without Griffin due to him punching a team employee. In one horrific half in Portland, the Clippers went from being a serious threat to reach the NBA Finals to approaching a final countdown of the Paul Griffin-Jordan era that could potentially end this weekend. A light heavyweight title unification bout between Daniel Cormier and Jon Jones will headline UFC 200 on July 9th in Las Vegas, UFC President Dana White announced on Good Morning America on Wednesday. UFC 200 was originally supposed to feature featherweight champion Conor McGregor in a non-title welterweight rematch against Nate Diaz. The UFC pulled McGregor from the card last week, however, after he refused to fly to Las Vegas for a commercial shoot and news conference. And finally, in media news, Skip Bayless is leaving ESPN at the end of August and reportedly joining Fox Sports. Through controversy after controversy and near daily mocking of LeBron James, ESPN suits looked the other way if his show First Take drew 400,000 viewers and beyond. On Wednesday, ESPN PR put out a preemptive press release announcing that Bayless would be parting ways with the network after 12 years. For months, Bayless and his reps have been talking with Fox Sports executives about the 64-year-old joining the network and having an afternoon debate show on FS1 built around him. Expect Fox Sports to announce in the not-too-distant future that Bayless has signed with them and likely for about $5 to $6 million per year, according to multiple sources. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and be a part of the show, please do so at 517-355-9527. That's 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
Decision-making, ability to give punishment by the commissioner is really unfair. I think that there should be other people that are involved in that process. And at the end of the day, if there's disagreements, then there's a third-party neutral arbitrator who has the ability to come in and resolve those situations. But instead, you're never going to have a trusted system. You're never going to have a trusted system when nothing is transparent. It's unilateral. It's judge, jury, and executioner handed down by the commissioner. Trust me, this is in the best interest of the league. This is, all the sound bites that come out of the league office when it comes to player health and safety, or when it comes to, these types of decisions that are made, where, we as players, based upon the facts of things that have happened previously with Donnie Gate and other instances, where we just know that that's not the truth, that's not the case, and we need a more fair process.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are now listening to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It's Wednesday. And big shout out to Mike Masson. He did a great job dwindling down our quick hit headliners. A lot going on. A lot going on. Again, as I said at the top of the hour, we have a great show in store for all of you. On the back end of the show, we will chat about a possible Major League Soccer team in the city of Detroit. Interesting discussion there. Also, Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and author, will join me to talk Tigers baseball. And also, we'll even talk a little UFC. as John Jones and Daniel Cormier will fight for the second time at UFC 200. But we open the show today with, of course, the thoughts of New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees concerning the Deflategate ruling. Yes, folks, over a year has passed now, and we are still talking about Deflategate. Can you believe it? My goodness. In a game that really didn't matter if they played with a beach ball, if they played with a volleyball, if they played with an invisible ball, the New England Patriots would have won that game against the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, it's ridiculous that we're still talking about this, folks. But Drew Brees was actually on the Dan Patrick Show this morning, and he took aim at the disciplinary power of NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. Now, he was asked for his reaction to the league's Deflategate penalties against Tom Brady, and he was asked to compare it to that of Bountygate. Of course, the situation that in which Roger Goodell came down pretty harsh on the New Orleans Saints. Now, for those who don't know, because some time has passed since Bountygate took place, but the New Orleans Saints Bountygate scandal took place, around 2009 to 2012. That's the time period we're talking about here, okay? And it was an incident in which members of the New Orleans Saints franchise of the NFL were accused of paying out bonuses or, quote-unquote, bounties for injuring opposing team players. Now, none of the hits in question were ever penalized or deemed illegal by in-game officials, but it was said that a pool did take place. The pool was alleged to have been in operation from 2009, the year in which the Saints won the Super Bowl, to 2011. Now get this. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, he responded with some of the most severe sanctions in league history. In the league's 92-year history, we had never seen sanctions like this, folks. It was among the most severe punishments for in-game misconduct in North American professional sports history. Now, defensive coordinator Greg Williams, he was suspended indefinitely, though this will be overturned the following year. Head coach Sean Payton, if you remember, he was suspended for the entire 2012 year, the first time in modern NFL history that a head coach has been suspended for any reason. GM Mickey Loomis, he was suspended for the first 8 games of the 2012 season. Assistant head coach Joe Vitt was suspended for the first 6 games of the 2012 season. And it continues, folks. It continues. The Saints organization was fined $500,000 and forced to forfeit their second-round draft selections in 2012 and in 2013. And on May 2nd of 2012, a few days before I actually graduated college, 4 current and former Saints players were suspended after being named as ringleaders in the scandal, with linebacker Jonathan Vilma also being suspended the entire 2012 season, the longest suspension for an on-field incident in modern NFL history. However, former NFL Commissioner Paul Tagliabue overturned all sanctions against the players on December 11th of that same year after finding that the coaches were primarily responsible of the scandal. Again, bounties put on the heads of players. If you take this guy out, we may have some moolah for you. And Roger Goodell came down pretty harsh, and he relinquished control of that situation to Paul Tagliabue. And again, he took back the sanctions against all players. That was messy. That was messy, messy, messy. So again, Dan Patrick asked Drew Brees this morning whether or not there's any relation between the two incidents that occurred with Bountygate back in 2012 and Deflategate here in present time. And you heard what Drew Brees had to say, basically hammering Roger Goodell on this standpoint. Roger Goodell has too much power. Now, before I proceed with my thoughts on this discussion, since we're talking about Bountygate and how it relates to Deflategate, I would like to invite a man who I'm sure remembers how crazy that situation was, seeing as though I'm pretty sure he was still in the New Orleans city when that was taking place. He's from New Orleans, for goodness sake, and he has a certain affinity for the New Orleans Saints because he's from there. That's his hometown. And I want to ask you, Isaac Constance, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, what was that situation like? You know, putting a finger on the pulse of the reaction of fans of the Saints once those sanctions were released from Roger Goodell and announced to the public, what was the reaction from the city during Bountygate? I'm curious.
Utter outrage. I mean, this is a case where, and at the time, I was one in the minority who thought, yes, there should be great punishments for this. But as things started to be unveiled and discovered about the actual situation, such as the coaches are mainly responsible, and the fact that in this situation, there were no direct correlations between bounties and actual punishments and hits and rewards. I mean, the two were uncorrelated. And then you think of all the teams that have probably set up similar legal systems. I thought it was a little bit overboard with the punishments, and most New Orleanians would go so as far to say much more than that. But I think you can draw a parallel between these two in the way that Roger Goodell came down by himself and tried to exercise the law. The NFL does not necessarily have the same committees that other sports do when it comes to determining suspensions and different punishments, different reprimands for players who are out of line. Mm-hmm. And that's when Roger Goodell steps in. And I'm not sure that's where he should step in.
No.
Because this is not his place in the league, and this is where Drew Brees was coming from. So, yes, it definitely brought back some bad memories because, if I'm not mistaken, we lost a first-round draft pick too. But at the same time, this is a case where Roger Goodell's, I mean, classically, just time and time again, has been an inveterate overreactor. He just time and time again will give out harsh punishments for things that might not deem that much, while his sport, his league, has more off-the-field infractions with domestic violence and other heinous crimes than any other league combined would have. So I do think it's a case of overreaction, and I think Bountygate and Deflategate are similar in that way.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. If there's any line that can be drawn between Bountygate and Deflategate, it's one man, that being Roger Goodell. Now, I will say this. I do believe that Roger Goodell, being the commissioner of the National Football League, should have a say, but not the end-all, be-all say in all disciplinary action concerning anything that happens in the league. It's gone way too far. And I would go as far as to say this. The finger shouldn't directly be pointed at Roger Goodell in this respect. The owners have given him this power in the NFL. So when evaluating this entire conversation, whether or not Roger Goodell has too much power, I think the general consensus here from everyone out there is that, yes, he has too much power. But the question that underlies that is, how did he get all this power? Well, it's from the NFL owners. They gave him this. They gave him the right to go out there and say, you know what, this is the way we're doing it, and you have no say from it. Simple as that. And again, yeah, he came down way too harsh, on particularly the players here, because the players, again, if you're a player for the Saints, and your assistant coach comes to you and says, okay, hey, you know, if you take out Peyton Manning in the second quarter, we may have couple thousand for you waiting on you after this game. What are you going to say as a player? No? Yeah, of course. Well, first off, it's your job to go, as a defensive player, it's your job to go out there and try to take Peyton Manning's head off in the first place. But knowing that there's a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow, of course you're going to go out there and take that. That's a no-brainer. The coaches deserve to have some type of punishment handed down. But again, I thought it was excessive to a degree, okay? Now, when discussing this whole Deflategate situation, you know, And I want to read a direct quote from NFLPA executive George Atala, who was equally critical of the NFL's disciplinary process while appearing on ESPN's radio's Russillo and Cannell today. And this is a quote. This is what again, NFLPA executive George Atala had to say. Quote, if we had a reasonable or logical partner, then this thing would have been settled forever ago. If we had a reasonable and logical and fair disciplinary process, then four games for something as trivial as this, even if you believe that Tom did do it, which there's still a lot of doubts if not complete doubt about it, is ridiculous. He goes on to say this, quote, I'd love to be on this program talking to you guys about some more fun things, like whether or not Oklahoma City guard Russell Westbrook is really a superstar or not. Yet here we are still talking about deflated footballs in one half of a playoff game that was a blowout. So what are you going to do? End quote. Now, Atala said the NFLPA is still reviewing the decision and weighing appeals options, including an appeal to the full federal appeals court panel, or even to the court of all courts, the Supreme Court. So, first off, it just amazes me that we're still talking about this, but I think that Mr. Atala had a great point there. I really can't believe that Goodell is still taking this the full way and is still trying to hammer down this suspension, knowing that there isn't any foolproof evidence. Again, if you look at this case, and again, and we had Ray on, you know, Ray from Indiana, who's a notorious Michigan hater, Tom Brady being a former quarterback at Michigan. And you know, Ray came on the show yesterday and said that, you know what, you know, Tom Brady did it. There's no foolproof evidence that Tom did it. Now, the only thing that you can argue in this situation is that Tom wasn't fully cooperative when it came to destroying his cell phone. You could say that. But at the same time, if there is all of this trivial conversation that alludes to no concrete black and white conclusions, how can you really hand down a 4-game suspension on Tom Brady? Hate him or not, I just don't get that. And it amazed me, again, going back to my point, it amazed me that Roger Goodell is taking this all the way. He's just trying to puff out his chest some more here, folks. He's trying to let it be known that, hey, I am, to steal a line from Drew Brees this morning, I am the judge, jury, and executioner here, okay? And what I say goes, because I am the commissioner of the National Football League. He's trying to rough and puff and let it be known that he is in charge. That's why he is taking this all the way here, folks. It's to the point of no return in Roger Goodell's eyes. He looks at it this way, okay? I've come this far. You better believe that my pride is on the line now. I'm going to take this thing all the way. So I find it utterly ridiculous. Now, I think he's sending a message to the rest of the league that, here we go. This is Tom Brady. This is one of the most beloved, if not the most beloved player in the National Football League. This is the face of his organization. But yet he's coming down and trying to make the man sit out 4 games. And I think he's sending a message to the league that it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you are the creme de la creme of what we represent in our league on the field. If you break the rules, if you quote-unquote break the rules, the hammer must come down. It's all about one word, in my opinion, Isaac, and again, it's about pride. Roger Goodell is one prideful man, and he's letting that be known with this whole situation.
I think there are two words. I think the other is power. Just unrestrained power.
Direct line between those two, yeah.
Yeah, he's not willing to relent or unleash any of that to other branches. You look at soccer. There's this thing called the FA in England. That's the Football Association. They've got a panel of judges to determine the different fines and suspensions and punishments that players should face. That's how to do it. The NBA has a fines panel. The NFL has one man, an autocrat, in charge making all of these different decisions when it comes to handing down punishment to players, choosing who gets the axe, who gets the guillotine, who gets whatever he wants. And that's what's messed up about this whole case. Because you mentioned Tom Brady is not found guilty of what he's alleged.
No, he's not. Right.
And there's a big difference between tampering with evidence or destroying a cell phone. And you can think he did it. That's fine. I personally think he did know about it.
I did too. I agree with you.
Not guilty.
Right.
Because he has not been found guilty. There's not compelling evidence to weigh in the fact that, hey, he did this. We found these text messages. We found this proof, this solid evidence that Tom Brady altered those footballs. And
Right. Even
if Tom Brady altered the footballs, like you mentioned, who cares?
Exactly.
Is that really a suspension?
Right.
He deflated footballs? We are talking about the most outrageous scandal in NFL history.
I still can't believe it's April of 2016 and we are still having this discussion. It's really mind-blowing to me. And another question I have to ask here before I wrap up this redundant conversation is, what in the world was going through the minds of that three-judge panel who ruled that Tom Brady needs to serve this four-game suspension? That's the question I have. What were those judges thinking? I don't know. I don't get it. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when those three judges were discussing this situation. I just don't get it. Folks, phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I will graciously read it live here on our airwaves, or you can even tweet me, and I'll do the same. If you tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. I knew he was calling. I poked the bear. I woke up the giant. He's on line one right now. We've got Ray from Indiana on the line. Ray, how you doing?
Skipper, you ready for the draft tomorrow night?
I am ready for the draft tomorrow night. It's going to be fun. We're going to have to actually do a draft special for tomorrow's show. So we'll be going, you know, at least through the first round and kind of dwindling down what our thoughts and predictions are, and also where a few Spartans and Wolverines are going to end up in the draft. Not saying that we are draft experts, but it should be a fun show tomorrow, Ray.
If anybody drafts a Michigan player, they're just wasting their time. They're terrible. Hey,
go ahead,
let's talk about Tommy.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. That's what we laid.
You better come clean now, Tommy. You're not going to get out of this one, okay? Like
Ray,
you did in high school and college and everything. John Beilein, David Brandon, Bill Martin, Lloyd Carr, they're all liars and thieves.
Ray.
Cheaters. So you better come honest.
Ray.
You know you destroyed that cell phone because it would have proved your innocence, and you weren't innocent.
Okay, Ray. When having this conversation, that's the only thing that you can criticize Tom Brady in a situation about. Now, do I personally think that Tom Brady knew that the footballs were a lower PSI than they were supposed to be and that he used that to his advantage? Yes, I think that he had some sort of knowledge when going through it and maybe even orchestrated it. But Ray, there's lack of evidence to prove it. I mean, you can't prove that Tom Brady really knew what was going on. And if you can't prove it, this is America. You're innocent until proven guilty, and there's no evidence alluding to that this man is guilty.
You think
that's
a bad boy is going to put air pressure in that ball and take it in the bathroom and stuff without somebody okay that knew about it?
But is there evidence to show that Tom Brady told them to do that?
Did he lie?
We don't know that, Ray.
Did he obstruct justice?
Ray,
for the commissioner to get to the bottom of it?
Yes,
he did when
we
he destroyed
that
cell phone. That's the only way he could have proved his innocence, and he didn't. He destroyed that cell phone because he knew it was going to show incriminating things that he had talked to those two guys about that ball.
You can speculate that, but again, the cell phone is destroyed now. So again, we still don't have any evidence. There's no evidence. That's what I'm saying here. In all fairness, the law here in America is you are innocent until proven guilty. There is no evidence that shows that Tom Brady was caught red-handed.
This had nothing to do with Tom Brady. The union knew they had agreement. They wanted the courts to take away their signature that they signed 5 years ago on that contract that said that we'll let the commissioner decide what we think's fair.
Mm-hmm. And they messed up that.
That's their fault.
They've given Roger exactly.
You can't blame the court. You can't blame the courts. The courts are doing by the law. If you go by the law, there's no way in the world Brady should win that case.
I don't know. But if you don't have any evidence to link the man to it, I don't know how that case holds any weight, Ray.
Do you remember back when the greatest turf on show, they were videotaping their practice, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's
Spygate.
Where this all
yeah,
starts.
Spygate, right.
They've cheated all along. They've won four world championships, and they're already a great team, sir. Why do you have to lie and cheat to go with it?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's fair. If you're talking about Spygate, yeah, they were caught red-handed videotaping signals on the sidelines. Yes, I totally agree with you on that one. And you know, it goes back to and I'm not trying.
How do we know that they didn't know every play that Kurt Warner and the greatest turf on show was going to do in that game? We don't know, do we?
No, we don't know. We don't know that, Ray. But again,
all right. Well, I'm just saying.
The man,
I want it to be a fair.
The man is innocent until proven guilty.
I want everybody to play the game honest. If one team's cheating over the other team, That's not being honest.
And again, it goes back to that old saying in sports, if you're not treating, you're not trying, right? I mean, let's be real here. Can we keep it real here, Ray? In sports, in sports, some of the greatest players in all of sports have found ways to, quote-unquote, cheat the system or to get over. Okay, I always bring up the example of who I believe is the greatest basketball player of all time, with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan did a piece with 60 Minutes not too long ago where he sat down with 60 Minutes and he kind of went through his tips and tricks that he would use to get over during a basketball game. And one of those tips was if a guy was defending him, to get by that guy, he would first locate where the referee was. If the referee was perched in the right corner and he was on the left side of the court, you know what Mike would do? He would pull his defender's arm forward so that his defender's momentum would go forward, allowing Mike to get a first-step advantage and to go all the way to the hole for an easy look at the bucket. I mean, all of the greats try to find ways. I mean, you can go back to the NFL in the whole glove situation.
I'm challenging New England Patriots, okay? They videotaped practices on the St. Louis Rams, okay? They got away with that one. Then the ball pressure. I'm going to tell you why they did that ball pressure like that, because they knew they had lost two or three straight 4 years in a row in Super Bowls. They couldn't stand it. They wanted to get the edge just enough to win that world championship, which they did because Pete Carroll called the worst play in the history of the Super Bowl.
It was a bad play.
Throwing the ball. All he had to do was run that ball, and he had one more timeout. So what's he do? Remind me of the Minnesota Gophers last year against Michigan. All they had to do was run the ball in on the inch line. Instead, they throw and waste all the timeout, and then they don't use their timeout until it's too late.
Right. I hear you, Ray. I hear you.
Some of these coaches, I'm telling you, they're the biggest knuckle brains I ever seen in some of their play calling.
Okay. I'm not changing the mind, Ray. You're sticking with your guns here. But, again, if you want to weigh in just like Ray, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
Again, if you want to weigh in just like Ray did, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. If you want to talk about Deflategate, even though, gosh, I hate that. We've talked about this for months and years now. Call in. We'll take your call. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk Detroit Tigers baseball with Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and author. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. I am your host, Al Martin. I want to pass along this breaking news to you all. And yes, it's another topic that seemingly we've been talking about forever. That concerning Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel. A Dallas judge ordered Johnny Manziel to appear in court May 5th and set bond at $1,500 after the former Cleveland Browns quarterback was indicted on a misdemeanor assault charge. Judge Roberto Canis told ESPN's John Barr on Wednesday that on May 5th, he will briefly explain the conditions of the bond to Manziel. The judge said that he is fine with Manziel turning himself in sometime this week. Theoretically, Manziel can do that anywhere in Texas. So, goodness, that situation is stickier or what? All right, well, folks, let's talk about the Detroit Tigers. Right now on the line, we have a man who knows his stuff. It's always a pleasure inviting him to the show and chatting with him. His name is Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and author. And we're going to talk some Tigers baseball. Now the Detroit Tigers, last night, the Tigers hitters weren't good enough. Right-handed pitcher Mike Pelfrey wasn't great, but he was better than in his first three starts as a Tig. He allowed 5 runs over 6 2/3 innings of work in his latest start. He gave up 9 hits and no walks, with 1 strikeout. The Tigers went on to lose to the Oakland A's 5-1 at Comerica Park. Get this, the Tigers have lost 7 of their last 9 games. They haven't scored more than 3 runs in their last 7. Talk about the Tigers and so much more. We invite Richard Kincaid to the show. Rich, how you doing, my man? Long time no hear.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on today. Sorry about the voice. I've just picked up a little chest cold effect. That's why you didn't see me at the spring game, because I didn't want Coach D'Antonio to, you know, have a sick guy hanging on the players. And, you know, so we avoided that whole thing. The thing that bothers me about the Tigers, it's driving me nuts, in fact. You've seen the movie Bull Durham, right?
Yeah, oh, of course.
Kevin Costner's that. It's a classic,
yes,
right?
One of the best movies of all time. Yeah.
Right when Kevin Costner joins his new model league team, the Durham Bulls, they're in the midst of a slump, and the manager, after a ball game, is screaming at them. He's calling them lollygaggers. You guys are lollygaggers. And I think that's what's going on with the Tigers right now. I could not be more disappointed. I thought this team would win 90, win the division, or challenge for the division. And I'm starting to think I might need to reassess this thing. The game Saturday against Cleveland, where they were humiliated 10-1, Cleveland scored an awful lot of two-out runs in that ball game. And I can think of three instances where there's these little flares to center field and to right that land, oh, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 feet in front of the outfielder. Mm-hmm. And nobody dove for the ball.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, you have got to make a play. And I'm trying to explain this to my poor wife on Sunday, why I'm upset about the Tigers. And she doesn't really care, but she married me. What are you going to do, right? You know, right. It's either talk to her, I got to hire a therapist to talk to somebody about baseball, right? Anyway, that extent, she's saying, well, you know, with all the money now, maybe they're afraid of getting hurt. And yada. And I'm like, but it's in the job description. So later in the day on Sunday, I'm watching the Dodgers-Rockies game. And the Dodgers had a 7-1 lead, but by the time they come to bat on the ninth inning, they're trailing 10-7. Mm-hmm. They pinch at Gonzalez, and he gets a hit. And then the next guy comes up, and it's a medium-depth fly ball that's going to go foul. And the right fielder for Colorado is a guy with an unusual name, Cargo. Mm-hmm. That's all I ever hear him called on the broadcast. So there in Colorado is Cargo. So Cargo goes hauling over there, running as hard as he can. And hardly slows down at all when he impacts the wall in foul territory and goes down into the stands. And he goes head over heels. And then, you know, the crowd is, all of a sudden the crowd in that area starts going nuts, you know. He's made this incredible catch and everything. I'm thinking that is exactly what I'm talking about.
It's effort.
Unfortunately,
right.
This story has a bit of a disappointing ending as far as I'm concerned, because young Mr. Doe, he's down and he jumps up. I got the ball in my glove, and, you know, that was one thing. Then they show the replay. He never caught it at all.
Really?
You know,
wow.
It was a super slow-mo, and he missed it by a few inches, but he never caught it. And obviously what happened is, so while he was on the ground there, you know, the stadium floor, somebody reached in and put the ball in his glove. Hey, we got out, right? And the other thing was, there were three or four little girls sitting in the front row who probably, I'm thinking, this game's 4 hours old now, probably don't even want to be there. Because the average attention span of a 7-year-old girl at a Major League Baseball game, from my own personal experience, having once been the proud owner of a 7-year-old girl,
right,
is about 4 minutes. So, but anyways, and nobody, you know, got between Cargo and these kids, and he just goes flying. But anyways, everybody's okay.
That's
but I just
good,
thought,
right.
how can you trot back out to right field? The place is going crazy. You're tipping your cap, and you know you didn't catch the ball. You know?
Right, right.
But nonetheless, the overriding point is he was willing to make that kind of sacrifice because his team needed the out. And, of course, the Dodgers came back and they scored like 5 runs, won the game 12-10, which is essentially now they're, you know, there. But that's the thing that's bothering me. There just seems to me to be a tremendous, just an abject lack of effort on the part of this team. In the game last night, there was a ground ball to short. Can't remember the name of it. It was a shortstop off the top of my head. But he, instead of backhanding the ball, he took the great circle route and kind of knocked it down and then made the long throw over to first. And the hitter, it was either Upton or Goes, was still out by 10 feet. I mean, they should have, you know, and then kind of go 3/4 speed down the line, you know, and this sort of thing. And then the incident on Monday out there in center field.
Yeah, and that's a lot to bring up because, again, for folks that don't know, again, Detroit Tigers center fielder Tyler Collins, it was announced by Major League Baseball that he will not be suspended for flipping the bird at the crowd at Comerica Park. And, you know, he seemed pretty sincere in his apology afterwards. I'm pretty sure anybody would after doing something that obscene during a baseball game. But are you surprised that the MLB didn't issue any suspension? And why? Why did they have that ruling?
I'm shocked. I thought he'd get five games. They suspended Papelbon when he flipped off the crowd coming off the field in Philadelphia a couple of seasons ago. Maybe it's just because of his apology, I'm sure, was sincere. But I've been going to Major League Baseball games since I was a little boy. My first game was in 1963. Mm-hmm. And in all the years, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, so obvious to turn and share with the entirety of the stadium. And then, of course, with the close-ups now that you can do the lip reading, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I have to think, what kind of bothered me also, I was thinking about this. Brad Austin said, well, I couldn't take him out of the game because what if at the end we're short a player? And I'm thinking, well, then you're short a player.
Right.
Think so? I mean, I'd have taken him out of the game if it meant I had to play with eight.
Exactly. Of course, it's about the message you sent. It's about the message.
That wouldn't have worked because, of course, the next time his turn, the batting order comes up, you're batting out of sequence. Bring somebody from the bullpen to play the field if you have to. I would have tapped Gold on the shoulder and set him out there and brought Collins in immediately. Well, I mean, right then and there. And I was thinking, what would Sparky do? That's kind of my fallback on this because he is the greatest manager I've ever known. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, if somebody had done that while Sparky Anderson is managing, that player's out of the ballgame. So I was very surprised to hear that the Major League Baseball did not issue a suspension. Then again, maybe I'm an old fuddy-duddy. And in the second part, you know, I wasn't always an old sportscaster. When I went to Michigan State, I was a pretty good fan. You know, and who among us hasn't flipped somebody off at a Steve in our lifetime? So, I don't know. But to do it in that situation, I don't know.
And, you know, Rich, it really bothered me. Something that came to mind, you know, just to put some historical context on this, and I don't know if this crossed your mind as well, Isaac, but, you know, with Jackie Robinson Day passing this past month, and I watched an incredible Jackie Robinson documentary that we actually aired on PBS on WKRTV.
It
was fantastic. It was a two-part series, 3 hours long, both of them. It was unbelievable. But, you know, they started to talk about, of course, you know, all of the hatred that Jackie Robinson would endure anytime he would go out there up to bat. And I'm sitting there saying Jackie didn't bite back one time. But, you know, and looking at Tyler Collins, I mean, he gets a few boos and his shelf life is so short that he immediately starts flipping everybody off. My, oh, my, have we gotten soft as a society, Rich?
Yeah.
My
God. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
unbelievable.
You know, the thing that actually surprised me the most, my takeaway from that Jackie Robinson thing, it just struck me as so sad, was that he was only 53 when he passed.
Right, so young.
Wow.
Right, so young. That's telling, isn't it? All right, so I want to go back to the Tigers really briefly here, Rich. Now,
yeah.
Looking at this squad, you just voiced your concerns mainly from an effort standpoint. Now, I totally agree with you. I mean, from an effort standpoint, it's not up to par right now for the Tigers. But do you think that we are overreacting just a bit, seeing as though we still got a lot of baseball left to play?
I think about that a lot myself. Sparky used to say, you know, tell me, wait 40 games, and I can tell you what kind of team I've got.
Right.
Well, after tonight, we're halfway to 40, okay? I mean, so I'm thinking we're halfway to knowing what kind of team we got here. But remember last year. I mean, they were flying high.
Oh, what a
start. Pretty much end of June.
Right.
I mean, they played that great series where they took two out of three from the Cardinals. They were either in first place or a game, maybe two games out, and then the bottom just fell out. My concerns, in addition to the effort, I thought they'd be back on top this year is because it seemed to me they have fixed the bullpen. Okay, I'm not as sure about that as I was when the season began, given a couple of these outings that we've been treated to by Frankie Rodriguez, who continues the Tigers' tradition of having very exciting closers because you don't know what's going to happen. But an overriding concern on the pitching side, I don't know how many starters they got, right? Sanchez says, I'm worried about that arm. He just doesn't look like he's a couple of nights here. He does not look like himself. Verlander's getting touched. I know he's not going to be the old 97-mile-an-hour, you know, 20-4 Justin Verlander.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he's given me a lot of concern. Jordan Zimmerman's pitched better. Well, gosh, he's been great. He's pitched better than anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
I expected that he would. And then after that, it's kind of like Shane Green and Pelfrey. And I'm a little worried. I got to say, I'm a little worried about the pitching.
Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and author. So Rich.
Hey. Yes. Quick second, Al.
No, go ahead.
I saw the most amazing thing. It's a promoter website, Deadspin. It's a pretty popular sports website.
Of course, yes.
Anyways, there's a piece there from a couple of days ago. Some guy was trying to watch the Cardinal game in St. Louis, and he came upon Blues Blackhawks Game 7, and it was the first hockey game he'd ever seen.
Right.
And so he starts tweeting about it, and it's just a scream.
I saw that. Yeah, it was his first hockey game.
I thought that's the best thing I've seen all week. He was trembling in Toronto by the time the game was over.
And you know, he sent out a tweet saying, "Where in the world has hockey been all of my life? Where have you been hiding?"
This is what he said. He cracked me up and goes, "Why have the white people been hiding this game from us for all these years?" That just made me laugh. And then when they pull the goalie, he's going, "Why is the goalie leaving?" When Chicago pulls the goalie, "Why is the goalie leaving? Doesn't he care anymore?" And then he says, "In the final minute, what I do is just have everybody on the team stand in front of the net, you know?" And I just thought he was just terrific. The one thing, the one caveat, the language, there's only one instance of your, you know, but he uses a word, I would have said stuff, and he uses a different word, so you want to be aware of that, but I just thought it was the best thing I've seen all week.
Oh, it was fantastic. I caught it right when I was getting off work yesterday, and I immediately had to share it. It was absolutely brilliant. I actually saw Jay Sarkar from WLNS TV6. He shared it on his Facebook. And it like everybody has seen it. It went viral. It's unbelievable. I gotta ask you this before we get you out of here, Rich. How hot is the seat for Brad Ausmus right now?
Well, I've never cared for the guy. I mean, as a person, I think he's terrific. I'm just not sold on him as a manager. I haven't been from season one. There was a game in New York. I can't remember the precise circumstances, but he didn't pinch hit Cabrera. Because with nobody out in the ninth inning of a close game, because he was afraid he was afraid the hitter who was up might hit into a triple play, and then Cabrera wouldn't get a chance to bat. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you can't make decisions based on that. A triple play is a 1 in 10,000 plate appearance occurrence. I mean, you know, if the guy hits into a triple play, nobody's going to blame you. Then that playoff series against Baltimore, you need to hit in the ninth inning, and he's got Eugenio Suarez and Hector Perez or something. They're the only two guys left available to pinch hit. And then after the season, he admits that his learning curve involves learning how to work on both ends, which I'm thinking you should know when he gets to the major league level. I'm just not sold on him as a man. Again, a great guy. And I will say Jim Leland is the guy that pushed for him, and I have a ton of respect for Jim Leland. And he's a much better baseball man than I. But my own personal feeling is that he's not the man for the job. I hate saying that because you're talking about a man's job. But I think the route for him would have been like everybody else in baseball, a few seasons in the minors. And then he might be a great manager at the major league level. I don't think he's a great manager at the major league level yet, however.
And you know what, Rich, it's so interesting because I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine over the weekend. We were talking about the Detroit Tigers. And, you know, Brad Ausmus, as you just stated, he's getting a lot of heat right now. And I do believe that his seat is a bit hot. But, you know, with all the grief that Jim Leland got, you know, especially on the back end of his career as a Detroit Tigers manager, a lot of people are wishing that Jim was the head of this team right now.
Jim used to, all reporters had something of a contentious relationship with Jim.
Right.
Okay.
Love
it. Nothing personal, you know, but he would, if you asked him a strategy question, he'd go, "What would you do? What would you do?" And I never did it, but I always felt like saying, "Jim, you're the guy that's won 1,600 Major League Baseball games. I haven't won any."
Right,
why do you
exactly.
care what I think? I just want to know, you know, what your thinking was on a certain thing. So we get along, now that he's not manager, we get along, pretty well, actually. I think he always likes me. Likes not the right word, but at least gave me some respect.
Right.
I try not to ask him stupid stuff.
Right.
You know?
There you go. And you don't walk into the fire. And I want to ask you, before we get you out of here, Rich, also, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this. As you know, Paul Carey passed away on April 12th of this year, earlier this month. And again, a famed American broadcaster and sportscaster who was a member of the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. He was the yin to, of course, Ernie Harwell's yang. Unbelievable. A lot of people called him the voice of God when he was on the air, and they were absolutely fantastic. Harwell and Carey were absolutely fantastic when they broadcast Tigers games. And a lot of people don't even know that Paul Carey also was the voice of the Pistons for quite some time as well. But do you have a favorite Paul Carey, story that you can share with us at all?
Sure. Paul and I were working together at the WJR. And even when baseball was out of season, there'd be some, every Friday night in the fall and the winter, during high school football and basketball season, Paul would come in while I was writing the sports final with Jared at 11:15. It was a 15-minute sports cast, and Paul would be in to prepare the Michigan State High School basketball scoreboard show, which aired at midnight. And then he did that for a few seasons after he retired from the Tigers, and always flawless, you know, the baritone voice of God. I used to enjoy it when I could make him laugh. He was a very nice man, truly super, always. And I always enjoyed it though when I could. He wasn't the easiest guy to make laugh. He'd actually say something funny. But I always liked it when I got a belly laugh out of him because the laugh matched the voice.
Right.
This big har, 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 you know, okay, it's perfect. So anyways, this goes on for, like I said, maybe 3 years, and then he retires from doing the high school football scoreboard show, so it falls on me now to do that show at midnight. And it was like approximately week one when I realized what a difficult task that was, to put 300 scores together like that and make it sound decent. And I had more respect for him as a professional than I did before. And I already had a tremendous amount of respect for him. He was a very nice man. I feel just terrible about this, Al. I left to go to the service that Saturday morning a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And the church was on Romeo Street, and my direction said Romeo Road. And I got lost, and I missed the whole thing.
Oh,
I drove around for it. Oh, it was just awful. But the funny thing was, I'm driving around on this dirt road, and I know I'm nowhere near where I'm supposed to be.
Mm.
And I know we've got, you know, you're supposed to have GPS and everything else, but long story, I'm lost. And I swear to God, I could hear that laugh of Paul Carey. And that made me feel better. And all I wanted to do was get to the service just to tell people he always treated me. It always meant a lot to me. Always. Yeah, great guy.
Thank you so much for sharing that on our airwaves. Again, the one, the only, the great Richard Kincaid, Detroit sports broadcaster and author. Rich, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Not to worry, kid.
All right. Gotta love that. What a story. That's fantastic stuff, Isaac. You know, interesting tidbit here. A lot of people don't know this about Paul Carey. On the air for years alongside Ernie Harwell, right? What a team, those two, first off. But did you know that during those Detroit Tigers broadcasts, and just to show you how much times have changed, Paul Carey used to engineer the broadcast while on the air. That don't happen no more, man. You usually got a guy back at the, you know, back at the station engineering and rolling in out of the breaks. Paul was the engineer while also providing analyst, color analyst for the broadcast alongside Ernie Harwell. He would lug up the equipment up countless flights of stairs at Detroit Tiger Stadium, do the broadcast, lug the equipment down, and go home. That's unbelievable, isn't it?
What a multifaceted town. I can tell you, engineering's no easy task.
Yeah, you would know, right?
So, no, I have so much respect for that. And, of course, rest in peace. But I heard about those two, the broadcasting combo, before even coming up to Michigan. I heard about them back in Louisiana. They are a legendary group, and baseball fans everywhere enjoyed watching them. So, rest in peace, Paul Carey. And, yeah, that was a fantastic story by Rich, and obviously you can see where his sentiment comes from.
Definitely gonna, you know, I wish I would have got a chance to meet him in person, him and Ernie Harwell. Oh my goodness, I mean, I've heard stories of those two, and just how, you know, you hear the same thing when a lot of people talk about them that knew those two, that they were just good men. They were just so good, and it's so polite. They will certainly be missed. And a lot of people don't know, again, Carey also served as play-by-play announcer for the Pistons for 6 seasons. He also did pre- and post-game shows for the Detroit Lions games in the late 1950s and early 1960s from Tiger Stadium. So, rest in peace, Paul Carey. Rest in peace, my man. All right, 5 minutes left in the show. I want to get your thoughts on this, Isaac. It looks as though Tom Gorris and Dan Gilbert, of course, Tom Gorris is the owner of the Detroit Pistons and Cleveland Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert, along with, you know, Gorris is also, you know, Platinum Equity founder. They are trying to join forces. At least talks are underway via Twitter. That's what I saw this on Twitter, actually, that they may want to put together a Major League Soccer team in Detroit. Now, the question I have for you, Isaac, because, again, you love soccer. You're a big soccer fanatic. Do you think that it will be successful in Detroit? Because I don't know. I know soccer is primarily a niche sport here in America, especially when talking about the city of Detroit. Do you think it would have any legs if they were to put that in place?
So I've got a few ideas about this, actually, because, for one, Detroit is a very urban population, just like New Orleans.
Of course,
New Orleans
right.
would never land a professional soccer team because we're too much of a city culture. Basketball, football, those sports thrive. But soccer, that's expendable in New Orleans. Detroit, I get a similar vibe from there. But in Detroit, you've got plenty of suburbs, and you've got a new up-and-coming hipster culture, which is the one which is funding and funneling into Detroit City FC, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm looking at attendance figures right now. But
and they're a minor league team,
were,
right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think their inception was in 2012.
Right.
And since then, attendance has ballooned. The first year, under 10,000, now touching on 30,000 in a season. So that's impressive, and that hints at maybe Detroit could sustain a team. The other thing is that MLS is currently looking to expand to 28 teams. So when can you have a league with 28 teams and Detroit, Michigan is not a part of it? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Detroit, mm-hmm. yes, it's shrunk in size, but it is still one of the most prolific, biggest cities in America sports-wise.
Do people care about MLS like that?
People can. Like you mentioned, it's a niche sport.
Right, well, what's the popularity? I mean, do you know what the numbers? We'll probably have to do some more research on this one, looking at the popularity numbers of it. But is MLS growing, or have the numbers teetered off? I mean,
It's definitely growing.
It is growing.
Right now,
okay.
It's growing. In any World Cup year, you'll see flocks of fans go to MLS teams and choose their allegiance. So in Detroit, that would be the year to ignite a team and start the MLS journey, if you will. But I think for Detroit, I think it's a possibility just because it is a niche sport. So mm-hmm. the whole city might not rally around it, but the people who do care will care deeply. They're not half-hearted fans whatsoever, and they would be fully behind the team, fully funding it, fully supporting it. I think there's a possibility. I don't think Detroit's number one on the list right now, but I can see why these negotiations are getting some tread.
You know, and I think it'd be cool anyway, just to have something down there. I mean, let's say that this is put into place and Detroit gets an MLS team. You know, I would go down there just to check it out and see what's popping. You know what I mean? And if you put it in the right location, I think it could possibly get some traction. So I don't know. We'll see. I really though want them to put the Detroit Pistons downtown Detroit before anything. But hey, that's just the fandom and me talking. So all right, folks. Well, speaking of soccer, on tomorrow's show we will invite Scout for the Portland Timbers MLS team, Brooks Lambeer on the show. We'll get his thoughts on a possible MLS team in the city of Detroit. And also, we will dive into the details of what his job entails with the Timbers. Looking forward to that one. We're going to have a hot show. It's going to be a great show tomorrow. And again, we want to give a special thanks to Richard Kincaid for coming on our airwaves, all of you out there for listening, and Ray for calling in. Really appreciate your guys' support. As always, we'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow, folks. You have been listening to Current Sports right here with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic afternoon. And be easy, people.